Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I have a very special show for you. What I am about to present is the beautiful edition published by Norton of the complete works of Isaac Babel. With me, all by phone, are Babel's daughter, Natalie Babel, Natalie Babel from Washington, the translator of the entire volume, and this is a rarity. What we have for the first time is the complete work by a modern writer, by one translator. So finally, there is a consistency and a consideration of the tone. And the introduction to the book is by Cynthia Ozick, one of the writers that I most admire, essayist, novelist, novellaist, short story writer. Her books include, most recently, Quarrel and Quandary and the Puttermesser Papers, Bloodshed and Three Novellas, The Cannibal Galaxy. And I thought that I would begin by saying what it was I encountered when I encountered the work of Isaac Babel. People had spoken to me for many, many years about Babel before I read him, and still I was not prepared, because the stories in his most famous book, The Stories in Red Cavalry, can cause your head to explode. They are a report, fictionalized, of the incursion of the Cossacks against the Poles as they traveled to bring communism to the New World. Babel, a Jew, was assigned to ride with the Cossacks by a news agency. And what we have is an extraordinary collision of culture and of poetry, because Babel is no ordinary writer. He is a presenter with immediacy of the inner world and the outer world, of Russian culture, of Jewish culture, of tribal Cossack culture, of Polish culture, all simultaneously. This book completely overwhelmed me. And so, when I found that there was to be the complete works of Isaac Babel, these include his stories of childhood in Odessa, the later stories as well, a new translation, all of these are new translations, of the 1920 diaries that went into the making of the Red Cavalry stories, his plays, his screenplays, these never before translated, I said, I must do a program about Isaac Babel, who is one of the masters of world literature. I thought I'd begin by asking Cynthia Ozick what her first encounter with Isaac Babel was like.
Curiously enough, it's in some sense lost in the mists of the past. I really can't recall, but it had to have been, it could not have been before the 60s, and perhaps was as late as the 70s, but it could not have been earlier than the 60s, it seems to me. And the fact that I can't remember when I first encountered Babel gives me the sense that he was always there.
Yes.
And yet there's this strange circumstance that many people are not acquainted with Babel. They don't know the name, or if they know the name, they haven't read it. And this is something that I find very puzzling, since he is, without doubt, one of the most original writers of the 20th century. Why is he not as famous as some others?
Now, Natalie, who
yes.
says her name, Natalie Babel, she grew up in Paris. We in America mostly say Babel. I hear that you encountered the work in a very unusual way.
Yes, but first of all, I would like to answer maybe Mrs. Ozick in the question she just asked. You know, why wasn't he better known? And my answer to that is that he disappeared, which I mentioned, you know, in some of my introduction. And not only did he disappear, but he disappeared in 1939. And then we all know what happened the following years. So, and he did not reappear shortly after the end of the war, as many people did. So it was really a gap of 20-some-five years. I mean, from 1940, let's say, to 1957 or something, when they finally published him for the first time in a censored version. Now, how did I meet him? Well, my answer is a little different, I think. My parents, both my father and my mother, were extremely adamant about my learning Russian, knowing Russian. So at home with my mother, who spoke perfect French, but we spoke Russian. And then, I don't know, I was never given to read little girl stories, even in whatever language. But from the very beginning of my life, my mother read me stories. And she always chose to read me stories in Russian, because from the age of 6 or 7, I could read the French by myself. And my mother had a very good taste in literature. Anyway, so she read me short stories, and they were by Russian writers, and there were one was Chekhov, the other one was Gogol, the third one was Babel, etc. So one of these writers was my father. Well, that was not a big deal, you see. It was normal. It was normal to have a daddy who wrote stories. And then she, of course, chose some of the very amusing Chekhov stories, and she would compare them for me to some of the Red Cavalry stories and illustrate with that her abomination, actually, detestation of the Soviet regime. So I was well informed at the age of 8 or 9, you know, of what had happened in the Soviet Union. And I remember an example of this unbelievable cruelty was in the story Salt. Yes. And I have known that story. Maybe I didn't understand all the subtleties of it, but I knew of the Cossacks, I knew of the Poles, I knew of the Jews. I mean, for a little girl, I was pretty well informed. And so that stayed forever. That's how I met him, if you like.
Oh, yes. Well, the amazing thing for listeners to know is that these stories, while they are, you know, they were published in the 1920s, I believe the book came out in 1926, and this was the immediate acclamation of a world master. Now, yes, one might think, therefore, since they were, Babel was working for a news service, a news service was connected to the government, this is the least approving rider with the cavalry that you can imagine. If American reporters had the opportunity to speak about what was going on in Vietnam in the true voices of outrage that they felt, maybe they would approximate some of the rage and astonishment and wonder of Babel. You can't believe that this writer, given what we know of the Soviet regime, was hailed, was given a dasha, was immediately recorded. Gorky proclaimed him the writer of the age. And so for Babel to be arrested in 1939, to vanish, we discovered, to be shot. He was arrested from the estate. He was taken away. His papers, yes, were taken, yes, away. His last words were, "They will not let me finish." This is a shocking and amazing story of the complete approval of a people and a government for a writer that they then revile.
Well, it is known that one of the, how do you call that, the people who interrogated him during his interrogations in jail, that man survived, and at some point later, in the later years, was asked if he had ever read stories by that writer, if he knew who he was, and he answered, no, why should I?
Oh, this is horrifying.
And, well, yes, it is said that one of his last words as he was being arrested were, they didn't let me finish, ne dali koncić. But in those archives, which have been discovered in the last 10 years, actually, this horrendous account of the trials, not only my father, many people were tried and shot and tortured for absolutely nothing, except that they were intellectuals, really, and Jews, probably.
Now, that's, over the subsequent years,
yes,
the diaries appeared, the manuscript was owned by a woman who had been given it by a friend of Babel's, excuse me, mm-hmm. who had been given it by a friend of Babel's. And of all the amazing things, a new life for Babel began. And we began to see in America, eventually there was a publication of the diaries. The plays came to the attention of the translator, Peter Constantine, and the screenplays as well. And his original project, I believe, was to translate these previously untranslated screenplays. Peter, how was it that you first came upon the work of Isaac Babel?
Well, my story as well, I suppose, is a little bit unusual. The first time I saw Babel's texts was as a teenager in the 70s in Greece, where I grew up. I went to the international school there, and we had a Russian department, which was very thorough and very powerful, sort of powerful presence in the school. And we it was interesting. The class was peopled by Soviet children, in other words, from Soviet Union, from Bulgaria, Romania, whose parents wanted them to have a good Russian education so they could go to the University of Leningrad later, or Moscow, Kiev, one of the big universities. However, our teachers were emigres, so we got to read interesting things like Zoschenko, Nabokov, actually, and Isaac Babel, which at the time was not on any curriculum in the Soviet Union. I mean, you did not read that in high schools. So we got an emigre education, but most of the children in class were not. So with Isaac Babel, immediately, I mean, that definitely sprung off the page, and there was an incredible electricity there. Even these teenagers found him interesting, surprising, just a voice from coming from a different angle completely. So that was the first encounter. And then when I actually went to Leningrad in 1979, 1980, to sort of see whether I might want to study at the university, they asked me, oh, what are your favorite writers? So I said, Zoschenko, I said, Isaac Babel. And I will never forget that frown on the face. They were not pleased. Now, as Nathalie was just saying before, he was reinstated in 1956, 1957. Before then, his name had been dropped from all the encyclopedias, all the dictionaries, all the... before 1939, he was everywhere in every publication about Russian literature. After then, in the Soviet Union, you couldn't find him anywhere. You couldn't mention his name. You couldn't own his books. You couldn't own manuscripts of his, like that diary. I mean, if Levin, who I think had the diary initially, if he'd been found with it, that would have been a very, very bad thing indeed. So even as Glasnost started budding out. Isaac Babel still wasn't, he was known, but he was not back. He wasn't read. He wasn't really approved of. So they were not pleased, and somehow felt that, that maybe if I was going to study there, that I wasn't going to be able to read these kind of authors, that I would study socialist realism, you know, the, yes, the authors yes. that, that, that actually stuck maybe a little bit closer to the to what the doctrine dictated, let's say.
Peter, how long did it take you to translate this huge, magnificent work?
It took about, I think, about 4 years. Because a lot of research went into it, and we were also
all
looking,
together.
Yes, we were also looking for extra stories and extra pieces that we kept finding in unusual places. Mm-hmm. So the project actually was even held up at some point because we found some other material that just had to go in.
Well, the complete works had been on my mind for a very long time, more time than I wish to say.
We're delighted that they're out of your mind now and in print.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, yes,
we are.
I'm very happy too.
I mean, I was upset for years by this lack of consistency, if you like, of coherence in the translations. I mean, here is one, here is another one, they overlap each other, one is good, one is bad, I mean, like that. And when I read Peter's text, I said, well, that's good, that's good. That guy knows what he's doing, that's good. And that's how it all started. And, of course, I jumped in with my idea of doing everything, but I never imagined that Peter would have the courage, actually, to redo everything. I said, you know, some of those translations are pretty good. We could incorporate them. And no. He did it from A to Z.
No.
And I believe it took him a long time, and I believe we drove our editor absolutely crazy.
You're listening to Bookworm. I'm Michael Silverblatt, and we're talking about the complete works of Isaac Babel. I have with me, by phone from all over the country, his daughter, the editor of the volume, Nathalie Babel, the translator, Peter Constantine, and Cynthia Ozick, who wrote the introduction to the book. As I was speaking to Nathalie the other night, she said to me, Babel was creating a language. And it's that language that I feel takes you by the throat and by the mind and by the groin. It is such a visceral poetic language that I can't think of things to compare it with. Some people say that the Hemingway of In Our Time, tame by comparison. Nothing like it. Yes, Babel famously says that nothing can stop the heart like a period placed in the right place, but Hemingway didn't even begin to know what Babel knew about commas and periods. The very first of the Red Cavalry stories has the sun rolling around the battlefield like a decapitated head, and the sun and the moon are constantly present. And into my mind came a sentence that I've otherwise never been able to account for in Nabokov. It's from Lolita. Humbert is on the stalk. He's going finally after Claire Quilty. And he says, the sun was burning like a man, and birds screamed in the drenched and steaming trees. And suddenly last night I realized this may well be Nabokov's tribute to Babel. At any rate, it brings in those aspects. The sun, how did he get the sun is burning like a man without Babel? But I noticed that there is, in what was called the Odessa School, a whole new poetry of the Russian language, and it's that I'd like to hear about from you.
Well, one does immediately notice on reading Babel in Russian that it's there are always surprises, always idiosyncrasies. The rhythms keep changing, and that seems to be, and it seemed to me as being one of the vital parts, one of the vital points in his style, so that the stories that he tells are absolutely incredible, but the second protagonist, let's say, in the story is the style, is the language.
Yes.
And when he started writing in 1914, 1915, the revolution was about to explode. There was a freedom. The censorship had fallen apart. People could start writing differently, experimentally. Mayakovsky, Pasternak started working with language, and the foremost of the stylists, I feel, was Isaac Babel, particularly in prose, always trying new things, pushing the Russian language almost to the brink, sometimes over the brink. But that's what makes it a compelling read from a stylistic standpoint. And I tried very, very hard to capture that, and had
two
Russian editors also of my own, who we analyzed some of these juxtapositions, to what extent one can do them, and then do them in English, redo them. And
doesn't Babel give us the key as well? I'm just looking now at a page of one of the most dazzling stories, Guy de Maupassant. And here, Babel, and actually, Michael, you have already quoted the most famous sentence from this, but here he tells us a little bit of how he does it. Of course, he's not really telling us how, but in some way, he's letting out a bit of the secret. The protagonist is a first-person narrator, and he's helping someone translate, and she's not very good. He says, when a phrase is born, it is both good and bad at the same time. The secret of its success rests in a crux that is barely discernible. And I want Peter to say what that word crux is in Russian. One's fingertips must grasp the key, gently warming it, and then the key must be turned once, not twice. And he goes on and he says, I spoke to her of style, of an army of words, an army in which every type of weapon is deployed. No iron spike can pierce a human heart as icily as a period in the right place. But then he goes, then he's left this overt discussion of style, and then he gives us an illustration, a few sentences on. He says, a black gleam shone in her lacquered hair, parted and pulled smoothly back, and then comes this sentence. Her stockinged legs, with their strong, delicate calves, were planted apart on the carpet. So suddenly there's there's sex. And then the maid, turning away her eyes in which debauchery had congealed, brought in breakfast on a tray. And these remarkable juxtapositions. What is the Russian word for crux?
I think that word is on page 753 or something. Go up and look it up, perhaps. But I like those selections you just made, because they do show the delicate and then planted, and that's what he does. You're surprised, planted firmly. You see these taut, powerful, muscular legs. There, it isn't your typical, sexy image. It's not your typical feminine, let us say, image.
It's surreal, isn't it?
And yet he manages to bring this mounting tension there from so many different angles, leaving the reader completely, lost for words, I suppose.
Yes, it seems to me often that is the effect that Babel produces such an extraordinary set of juxtapositions that the words, as impressive as they are, they disappear, so that what is left in the mind is a kind of welter or explosion, the blank space of all these oppositions.
And opposition, yes.
You begin again with Babel, each time you read, finding more and more bits of language that almost disappear in the mind because of the fierceness with which they've been joined. It's an extraordinary effect, and one can't imagine, you see, how it's achieved, because by the time he gets it on the page, it seems effortless. Cynthia, I wanted to ask you, in The Shawl, which is perhaps your shortest and most famous story, some of your effects seem to be earned by, on the basis of learning, Babelian compression. Was he a figure in your own writing as well?
Not consciously, but certainly, to borrow your word, welter, there is in the unconscious part of the writing mind a welter of influences, a mishmash, and there's no way truly to know what comes from where. I mean, your own illustration of Nabokov, did he have Babel in mind? Well, it can be that a great writer, once you've read and read and read deeply in a great writer, it enters in some way your DNA. We used to say your marrow. Today we say your DNA, and it's perfectly possible. I could not, I couldn't testify to it in any concrete way, but it seems to me that everything a writer has read then it gets transmuted through the new pen, but the old words somehow color what comes out new.
I've been talking with Natalie Babel, Peter Constantine, yes, and Cynthia Ozick about the work of Isaac Babel, especially about the wonderful new translation from Norton, The Complete Works of Isaac Babel. There's nothing like the work of Isaac Babel, a true 20th century master. And I want to thank you all for joining me in celebrating him.
We thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
I thank you.
You can read a selection from The Complete Works of Isaac Babel on the Bookworm page at kcrw.com. The producer of today's program is Sarah Spitz. The engineer is Ray Guarna. My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. Special production assistance from Alan Howard and Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next week on Bookworm.
To the jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. Archived editions of this and other Bookworm programs can be found online at kcrw.com, keyword Bookworm. Cassette copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme.
Now with Book of the Mouse, Mouth
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.